Scorpions Avenue.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
I actually will say we keep getting this comment, this like complaint from our listeners to explain basically what we look like, how we're dressed, how we're acting.
Oh, God.
And so I just figured I'd kind of paint the scene for everyone again.
It's going to be offensive. It's going to be offensive.
Yeah, I'm sure we get this comment that Brent's always looking at in the comments that he doesn't read.
So
he's too afraid to read.
Per usual, I'm in my, you know, sort of dark gray jeans and a sweatshirt. Elliot has a beautiful shoulder-length French braid ponytail. He's wearing a yellow raincoat with nothing underneath. Actually, I shouldn't say nothing. He has nipple tassels on that appear to be attached via chain to a butt plug.
I'm waiting for me.
We'll get to you.
Yeah.
Elliot's a little out of breath. He's covered in scratches and dirt and leaves. It seems like he's spent most of the day in the bushes.
Elliot is Jeffrey Dahmer,
intimate company.
In this situation.
Alan is, of course, wearing a T-shirt that said, "I met God, she's vegan, trans, and polyamorous."
I actually did used to have a shirt in New York, and I made it into a joke that said, "This is what a Jewish feminist looks like." And I remember
so
once
funny.
I wore it to the Statue of Liberty with my family, and it was just, I looked like the weird, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
did.
This is what a Jewish feminist looks like. I am.
That's true.
But
same here.
We will also get into the meat of our opening textual healing theme, which is the so the Trump administration has sought to discharge two airmen by claiming on the basis that they could not be deployed to the Middle East because they are HIV positive. Mm-hmm. And from what I could tell, I did a little bit of research. It does seem like that has historically been the case. People who are HIV positive are not usually sent into.
It's the case for a lot of factors, but within the military, yes.
Yes. So this isn't exclusively a Trump administration decision. But both men who were diagnosed in 2017 are on antiretroviral.
I do believe it is exclusively Trump because Obama made a point of destigmatizing HIV statuses throughout many areas of his administration, both in terms of immigration. So we had a policy for a long time where people coming to the United States, immigrating to the United States, wouldn't be able to enter the United States if they were HIV positive. Obama changed that. And then also in the military as well, being able to serve. So I actually
I didn't find corroboration about
I'm not.
That,
yeah, so, I can't say 100%.
So, yeah. So we can't say that. Yeah. But anyway, so these airmen are suing to be able to have the chance to be
deployed.
Also, because you said, you said they are they're getting treated, they have no symptoms, and they've been pronounced physically fit to deploy.
That's right.
Well, and the correct term within the HIV positive community would be they are undetectable.
Right.
Got it.
So it's also particularly relevant given that there's an unrelated military policy right now, colloquially referred to as deploy or get out, which is a policy that states any military soldier who has not deployed in a year could or should be discharged. So this is obviously problematic for HIV-positive service members who are deemed, quote, undeployable.
It's honestly as if, like, everything that's already happened with Trump is such a nightmare, but it is honestly often it feels like, especially with the topics that we cover, it feels like there's somebody somewhere in the White House who's just kind of, fumfering through old policies and just looking up any way they can just like kind of twist the knife a little bit.
There
and
is.
Fuck us
He's
over.
He's called the chief of staff. He's called Nick or Mick Mulvaney. What's his name?
Nick Mulvaney.
Nick Mulvaney. And you're right. It's and historically, Republican and Democrat administrations often, in order to not get large press, because this is not a story that's going to be on the front of New York
right,
Times.
Of course.
They will sort of piecemeal strategy within their administration, their government, to discriminate against people openly.
Against trans people in this entire administration.
Yes, and doing it in ways that is just so subtle, but yet then when put together, or nominating judges that are vehemently against progressive whatever, just to slowly wreak havoc.
Turn back time.
All right, so to play devil's advocate for a second, there's a million different physical conditions that would keep someone from being deployed. And I think the problem right now with the Trump administration is that they haven't caught up to this, the scientific reality of being undetectable. So,
which is nuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, of course, I agree.
That is nuts.
But I also think there's a lot of people who don't under. I mean, there's a lot of people, I bet, a lot of our listeners who don't know what undetectable means, or if we haven't talked about it, we don't talk about it regularly.
I guess so.
I looked up the list of reasons why you could not be deployed, and it's. I mean, it's just it's pages and pages long.
Sure.
And everything from gout.
Yeah.
To like high blood pressure.
Are bone spurs on there?
Yeah.
But even not in terms of deploy or get out, that policy, just alone, the idea of being like, yeah, let's discharge these two guys.
No, not discharge. They're just not deploying.
Yeah. Right.
Them.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's just the insidious choice.
To make a point of it. I mean, the thing is,
it's making a point of
these are two guys. Statistically, if you look at, you know, everyone being deployed, statistically, the number of people who are probably HIV positive is very small. Very, very small. Probably these two dudes. And you don't need to make an issue of this. This is something that
somebody's willing
to
serve.
Deployment is, even though there are a million reasons why someone could not be deployed, those million reasons aren't categorically why someone can't go. Because if they were, no one would be deployed. They are a case by case basis. And if someone had gout 10 years ago, that could, with one person, stop them from being deployed. But with another person doing their deployment status, could send them. And
also,
so this person who's doing the deployment or whoever their boss is saying, no, we need to make sure that of all of the reasons, the millions of reasons why they can't be deployed, this particular reason needs to be a no way they're not going.
You know, the whole list of physical ailments for why you can't be deployed, for many of them, if they improve or if they can be treated, then that person is then deployed.
Yeah.
And there's a judge who ruled. A panel of judges blocked the discharge, and Judge James A. Wynn Jr. wrote a three-judge panel on the court wrote, a ban of deployment may have been justified at a time when HIV treatment was less effective at managing the virus and reducing transmission risks. But any understanding of HIV that could justify that this ban is outmoded and at odds with current science. Such obsolete understandings cannot justify a ban, even under a deferential standard of review, and even according appropriate deference to the military's professional judgments. Mm-hmm. So it's cathartic to hear some semblance of logic and exasperation in those words alone.
Well, and it also harks back to sort of, you know, the debate. Really never should have been a debate, but the debate about women in sort of active service and the ridiculous arguments about their menstrual cycle would keep them from being able to adequately perform on the battlefield or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, we know that these are ridiculous falsehoods, that if you just understand science, or not even just understand science, you just listen to a doctor say it's fine.
Right.
And you get an adequate medical professional who has been educated to know that undetectable levels mean this person on their course of medication, just like a person who's deployed who has, well, I don't know, mental disabilities, that they suffer from depression, but not the debilitating depression that would keep them away from their service. They take a medication that makes them able to be able to do what they need to do.
To be a person.
It is no different.
Oh, it creeps me. It really doesn't just bother me. It creeps me out.
Well, the argument then on people who I'm assuming, this isn't just me trying to understand the conversation. If someone thinks that an HIV-positive person shouldn't be on the battlefield, the first place, when I put my head in their head, is that, oh, if they bleed, if they get shot, what's going to happen? It's undetectable, which, again, that's the science.
The modern reality has made it that
exactly.
You can be undetectable, right.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't know that, and that is unfortunate, and you're right. People need to know that. However, this is not a situation where the people should be deciding. This is a medical doctor who's in conference with a deployment officer deciding on this.
Yeah.
And
doesn't Trump's quote-unquote doctor have, like, that like a genuine ponytail that, like,
his New York doctor?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But, Ellie, you have a ponytail.
That's true.
Yeah.
Ringlets all the way down my arms.
It's gorgeous.
Not not even joking.
We have one loud, real businesswoman, y'all.
Loud.
Loud, real businesswoman in the room.
Our next guest is loud.
No, this is on their bio. Loud, yeah. Real businesswoman. Meatball.
Hello.
Am I wrong in saying that that is in your bio on,
that
like,
is on
Instagram
my bio.
Or something?
I thought Alan
and
was
I
just
am
calling
very
you
loud.
Meatball would have no problem with me calling her loud.
No, on our podcast, they get mad at me because I don't scoot off the mic when I'm going to scream. So someone has to, like, level it all the time. Ooh, I'm gonna
have you always been, like, a loud person?
Yeah.
Always.
Just always. I couldn't help it. I needed the attention.
Well, first off, I have to say, you co-host Sloppy Seconds with our past guest here on You're Making It Worse, Big Dipper.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on this show. And you also, we did your old podcast, Unbearable.
Yes,
the three of us
so
did
much fun.
That before.
It was right when we started doing our podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people probably have seen you because they can watch on Netflix now or Prime on Dracula, the first season,
our
right?
Our season isn't on Netflix.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, you are sore losers.
I
Follow
know.
You for not watching early.
It's kind of a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you came able to amass a following without being on Drag Race, without Dracula being on Netflix. You've really done the work.
Oh yeah. Well, I also like really wanted I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
That was like my goal when I went into Dracula, whether or not I like thought about it or not.
Well, it is particularly interesting, and I've talked about this maybe with you before, where. You know, sure, there are drag queens who, of course, were around before Drag Race, and they're working and they're doing their thing and whatever, but they've never been on Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the queens who, I think, for both of us, who kind of have started drag while Drag Race is on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rare for a queen to have be in our sort of age group to then find success without using Drag Race. And you have successful, and parlay that into working with Drag Race girls.
Yes.
And you have done that, which is admirable.
But I also think it was because, like, Dracula season one was as popular as it was. Mm-hmm. Like, I did get a huge spike from that.
Yeah.
Can you explain what the difference is between Dracula and Drag Race?
Oh, right. Well, this one is ooky and spooky. It's very kooky.
You in a coffin with maggots and shit is the, I can never watch that again.
I think instead of, like, a runway challenge, there is a runway, but the aspect that, like, people like is that it's got Fear Factor involved. So for me to get exterminated, I was, like, buried underground in a coffin, and then they were dumping in, like, insects and
Sounds
animal
intense.
Piss. It was pretty
animal
intense.
Animal piss?
Yeah, there was, like, deer urine,
yes.
And I was just like, ooh, that smells so bad.
It is funny to watch Meatball in the
Brent
box,
Brent is adding
though.
It to his list right now.
Right. Yeah. It sounds right up my alley.
Right up his alley.
It's good.
Believe it or not.
It's good.
We tried to get him to watch Drag Race a little bit, but he never really got into it.
I did go through I think I've seen every single Fear Factor people eating weird shit moment from the night from the aughts.
That's the one thing that would get me through Amazing Race is that I would be able to eat anything.
Ugh. Oh yeah. For sure.
Oh really?
That's my strength.
You
I can't
eat, like,
run for miles.
Bug.
I can't jump on shit. I can't jump for shit. But I can eat anything.
But you could eat a live bug.
Yes, of course.
Really?
And I would.
What do you mean, of course?
Right now, if you want me to eat a live bug for a joke, I would do it.
I'll give you a dime to eat a live bug right now.
Bring a bug.
Would you eat a live bug, Meatball?
I'd eat a dead bug.
What's the grossest thing you did on Dracula?
I didn't do any other challenges, so I didn't have to do anything.
Because you were successful.
Because I was doing okay, and I was a real cunt. But I guess the worst thing was that the bugs were, like, on me. That's, like,
How did you come up with the name Meatball?
I used to live in New York, and I was, like, 18 when I moved there, so I had a fake ID, and I'd go out drinking all the time.
Yeah?
And I lived
the boiler
across...
room?
Oh, bitch, yes, I lived in the East Village.
The same.
So
I lived on East 4th and C.
I was on 6th and B. Okay, so I would always go to the Nina's Pizza that is now a Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
And I would always get a meatball sub. Like, it was almost every night. Like, it was becoming a problem. And they started calling me the meatball guy. And then eventually, I got into drag, and, like, they were like, you have to come up with a name. And I couldn't think of, like, a Rebecca or, like, a Jessica. Yeah. I just, like, didn't look at my fat, hairy self like that. And I was like, Meatball, it makes sense. And, of course,
it really does.
Rebecca Meatball.
Rebecca Meatball.
Yeah, and you were doing, before drag, correct me if I'm wrong, you were doing stand-up.
I was doing stand-up in New York, and I was also doing, I was, like, trying to act, which is why I first came to L.A., but I did a lot of voiceover in New York, like radio commercials.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, and then I did...
That's a dream job for Brent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't exactly say that,
but I
would take it. I
remember you talking about that, about you wanted to do voiceover stuff.
I have had the thought that I should do it because I do have... A silky voice.
You do.
You have a great voice.
Yeah. Thank you.
The voice of a killer.
So, what was that like?
It was fun. I got into it because I was in college and one of our teachers actually was like a commercial agent.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, you can do all these fun voices. Like, why don't you just come and intern for me? And then it was just like that thing where they were like, oh, someone's not here. Why don't you just step in and do it?
Yeah. Where'd you go to school?
I went to NYU Tisch.
Oh, I went to NYU Gallatin.
Build your own path.
Elliot was originally an opera singer major.
I went to Steinhardt originally.
I know. I've seen the videos of you singing. It's so good.
Sangs.
So wait, you were at Tisch.
Mm-hmm. And then I dropped out. Because I don't know. I don't do well with like people telling me what to do.
Sure.
And in that situation, they were always like, you have to learn these things. And I was like, but what is that going to get me? Like, where am I going to get knowing how to run a camera?
Wait, can I ask you a question? Because you were just saying before we started recording that you're from small town Texas.
Yes.
I've always had such, because I moved to New York from Michigan, but I moved from a city with dozens of friends, basically. And I've always been blown away. I had like four friends. I've always been so blown away by people who could come from a small town, any small town, and move to a big city without knowing anyone. For college, I guess it's a little different.
Yeah.
What was it? Was that extraordinarily stressful or intimidating?
It was a little intimidating only, but I moved in with somebody that I had previously gone to high school with year before, because I actually left high school in Texas because I hated it. And so when I was 16, I went to a boarding arts high school in Michigan called Interlochen Arts Academy.
I know from Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome.
You're having so many moments of connection with
We're all friends, you guys. Take it all in. No. And so I was there. And so from there, that's where I went straight from there to New York.
Got it. Okay.
And how did you go from stand-up to track?
I had a terrible breakup with someone that I was like, we're definitely going to get married. And it was like a year and a half into the relationship.
Was this in New York or L.A.?
This was in New York. Okay. And then I moved to L.A. after the breakup because I was like, I'm just going to get out of the city. I just can't be here anymore. And then I moved to L.A., started working. And I didn't really like working in L.A. Like, I was like, why did I do this? And I was, like, in a very lost place. Yeah. And one of my friends from school was like, come with me to this drag show. And we went and saw Raven and Morgan McMichael.
Showgirls?
Yes, it's Showgirls. Yeah. In WeHo. And at that point, I had, like, stopped doing stand-up because I, like, could not tell a joke. I was so sad.
Yeah.
I, like, needed to be in therapy.
It's usually when most comedians tell jokes.
Yeah. Right. It didn't work that way. I think my energy needs to be, like, high for me to, like, function. And I was in such a dark place because of something that, like, now I think about it is so dumb. But
was this a standard breakup or was it actually genuinely bad?
Oh, he like cheated on me, but like didn't tell me about it. But why would you tell someone that you're cheating on him? But then I had to like find out the hard way.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, I'm a sad lady. And then I saw these drag queens and I was like, oh, they get to be funny and they don't have to use their words or their thoughts. Like they can just put on a song and like come up with a bit. And I was like, that's an easy thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. It will maybe make me happy. And then I just started, like I just showed up at a club one night and full drag in the middle of like Eagle Rock, and I was like, "Who wants to let me on a stage?"
Did you have a drag mother?
No, my friend Joe.
Drag mother's your friend Joe.
Yes, just my friend Joe, and he was like a visual artist, so I was like, "You know how to draw lines, right?"
Yeah,
and I
like,
forced him to learn how to do makeup so that he would do it.
So didn't know what like the I don't know the basics.
I didn't even know anything about drag. Like I went and saw the show.
And how long ago was this?
This was 4 years ago.
Oh wow, so not long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about it, and I was like, you seem to love these people, and then these people. Oh my god, I'm so bad.
Oh my god.
And then we watched a bunch of Drag Race and like put me in makeup and that's how it started.
And did you find your look very quickly?
Oh no. Okay. I was real ugly. No fault of our own. Like neither one of us knew how to use makeup or what we were doing. Yeah. And I was fucking ugly.
It was real ugly.
It was bad.
Why? And what was so bad?
I just, you know, there's like, it takes a long time to figure out what your face shape is.
Mm,
and all these videos online that people are teaching people how to use makeup, it's like they're skinny white people faces.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I wasn't taking into account that like I don't have that bone structure.
Yeah.
I don't look like that. So like when they say contour from the bottom of your ear, I'm like, oh, my ears aren't the same as your ears.
Yeah.
And like it took me 2 years to figure
that
out.
It's so mind-blowing. Like I have a massive head.
Yeah,
literally,
I got a
like
big old fat
big
head.
Fucking head. And figuring out how to do your liner, or just if you even can do liner based on the amount of skin that you have in your face. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
And,
it's
like, and
it's
some like a people's math eyelids it is. Are bigger and smaller, and yeah. it's just like it's kind of math on your
but you
own
have, yeah. And you have a signature look now.
Yes, I do.
That yeah. you could like
a great signature look.
I can do in like 45 minutes now. I'm very excited. Yeah, wow.
That's really impressive.
When Alan started doing drag, I was blown away by the like Brent said, sort of the math of it. When you would explain to me like, when you and Michael would explain like how makeup works and like that there are these like rules yeah.
and
regulations.
Michael,
I was
Michael's
like,
the reason
what?
Why I've never looked really, really ugly.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
No, yeah. You came out of the gate looking good and
looking
I was like,
pretty,
that's
because
yeah.
I'm old
fucking
as fuck.
Bitch.
I am old as fuck and I gotta come out the gate looking good. I don't have time to wait.
I made a video a few years back and something happened, but our good friend Georgia Hardstark and I, we just had this idea one day.
I'm just texting with her today.
Oh, well, yeah. You never quit bragging. Yep. We had an idea to put out all of her makeup and I would just do her
Oh, you have a picture of that.
And it was so funny and fun and like I genuinely tried, but she also put out everything. So she had there's markers and shit and there's brushes and there's certain things I've seen, like the clamp you put on your eyelashes and my grandma had one of those. I know what rouge is.
Rouge.
Rouge, right? That's a thing. That's what Ellie puts on his booty.
That's
what
my grandma used to say.
Some rouge. Just
right, rouge.
Just some rouge.
Just my pinch your skin.
But it was, it was really fun. And like she looked like a disaster.
Of course she did.
Oh my God.
Did you do eyeliner or anything?
I think so.
I can't do eyeliner on my eyes.
Maybe I didn't do eyeliner. Yeah. I don't want to like poke her eye.
Whereas you do eyeliner.
Well, because I can't do eyeliner on my eyes. I just feel like because I have such a big face, like everything has to be so huge. So my wings like literally touch my wig line.
It's kind of a cross between sort of like a traditional drag queen that does like a, you know, the normal shape, but yet it has a Trixie Mattel, who's a past guest here, influence. Yeah. And I mean, I think I read an interview doing research, which is weird doing research because we're friends and I know you, but still, doing research on you, that you had mentioned that Trixie is, even before you were in drag, was kind of one of your favorite comedians.
Yes.
And so you see that influence of Trixie.
Yes.
In Meatball, so much.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and are there,
go ahead.
Are there other comedic queens or non-comedic queens who have served as inspirational for you?
Besides Sadie Pines, of course, please.
Sadie Pines, always. Yeah. Top of the list, you know? I think I love Bob the Drag Queen because of his approach to it, which is just like, it's comedy first, not a look.
Mm-hmm.
But I was obsessed with Amy Sedaris and like Stranger Things.
Jerry Blank.
Yeah,
Jerry Blank, and like the fact that
Meatball
she
has kind of Jerry Blank makeup.
That's
so
true. Yeah, I mean, it's a little
so
kooky sometimes, but like I just love that energy of like being so wrong, but being fully committed to it.
Yeah. So committed, so confident in your wrongness.
Yeah, and just being bad at it.
I love it.
But I also, my favorite story is that like one Christmas, she wanted a full body fat suit.
Yeah.
But her family was like, they couldn't afford it, so they just got her the bottom half, and that. That's where Jerry Blank came from.
Incredible.
Yeah,
it's because she just put it on and was like, this is who I am.
And Jerry Blank is also based on a person.
Yeah.
This woman, Flory Fisher.
Oh,
you will just, as soon as you're done
go
on YouTube. There are amazing videos of Flory Fisher talking to high school students, and she's like an ex-con or something. That's where Amy got the idea for the show.
Oh, my God.
Don't you have in your act something like a fat suit, or there's something that you wear over, it's like a reveal.
Oh, yeah, I reveal to this fat suit that I made, which is so stupid. But when I made the fat suit, I was like, it looks great, but I was about to go on this trip to the UK, and I was like, I gotta step it up. I'm about to be with all these Rue girls.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of my friends come over, and I was like, will you guys stone this fat suit for me? So now it's like this big sparkly fat suit that when you reveal to it, it's like really gross.
It's so funny.
And then it tears away to like my normal body.
Yeah.
So I'm still like, I look thin.
Mm-hmm. And you don't shave, right?
No, I absolutely don't. I was just, it's so annoying.
And what, I mean, did you see that as like
shave
breaking
your body,
the rule? Yeah, shave your body.
Oh, like, yeah.
Breaking...
I shave my face.
Yeah.
I'm not a bearded. Yeah. I'm not one of those gross bearded queens.
No.
But, I mean, it is
different. Lot of people do not like it because it's like, it doesn't fit their fantasy of like what
woman.
Drag is, which is supposed to be like this hairless creature of Christ that's like beautiful and nice.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know. If I shave, I feel like people would be grossed out by, because I'm very hairy,
uh-huh.
would be grossed out by like the little bumps and yeah. the razor burn that my body gets.
Yeah.
So it's like, what do I want?
No, not even nair it. Like I get, I shave my arms, and like even on my arms, I get little bumps and stuff. Like,
but also to me, it's like, why shave
nair makes it worse.
Well, that's my question is, do you know that it's like punk, or do you do like, is it?
I forget about it.
You forget about it. So it's not.
I completely forget that I have body hair when I'm like dressed as a lady and I'm like, ooh, I'm feeling the fantasy. And then someone will like put their hand on me. And I'm like, ooh, I forgot I'm sweaty. Like, you know what I mean? I don't pay attention to it. And then I'll like look at pictures and I'll be like, woof, beast, what's wrong with her? But now I've gotten into this phase where like I leave for the UK tomorrow. So like right now I'm like strapping on nude illusion panels to everything to kind of hide the hair.
Oh, what is a nude illusion?
It's I get a high density stretch
mesh. Besides Brent's porn name.
God. I also love that like you get sick of things so quickly.
Yeah.
Like when the sex talk happens. It's my favorite.
Listener of the podcast.
Oh, I do. Awesome. I listened to the Max Emerson episode today. Because we just talked about him on my podcast. And I was like, yep, no, just as dumb as I thought. So I get like a white mesh and I dye it to match my skin tone so that when it's... Yeah. So I can like cover my body.
Which is really shitty that they don't... Because I mean, for me, getting a nude fabric is... It's not hard to match my skin.
I'm not weird in between color.
Yeah.
So it's like a hard color.
They don't make enough. It's like with makeup.
How many do
they
make? Like
two?
Well,
I mean, there's usually like, you know, for black people, for white people, for Asian people.
For Asian people.
Like it's like, and it's universal, but skin tone isn't universal.
Mm-hmm. And so, Alan, there's Native Americans. There's Pacific Islanders.
Yes.
Just list them all off.
Lots. And you know what? We support all of them.
All of them. And they all deserve nude illusion.
Yes, honey.
That's correct.
Oh, I want nude illusion so bad because I can't show, like, I'm just, my body is ugly,
but
and
you course it really
like,
tight, and you add well.
I do,
so you get the right shape. But then the problem with being like a fat person who does drag is like sometimes you want to like show.
Yeah, you want to
like
show your stomach or
your
arms
stomach or something,
your...
which I often do. Like sometimes I don't care, and I'll just like have my hairy belly out and just be in a bra and panties. But that's
in drag, like as final product.
Yes,
I love that.
There's a picture of me. I did like I redid a divine look, and I feel like that's the only reason no one got mad was that they're like, well, he's doing divine, so.
So it's fine.
But yeah, you want to like show off your body and you can't. So because you're corseted and you want to give that illusion. So you have to like wear
I will say Meatball's
over.
Body, like, and we've talked about this before, because like every time Meatball does a padded look, so like the hips are padded and stuff, it's the best padding. Mm. Your silhouette is perfect.
Thank you. It took me a long time to figure that out.
It is hard
too.
To figure out. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they don't make, I mean, it's just like me complaining about buying things, but they don't make pantyhose and stuff big enough for like a fat person who wants to pull over like a pair of like 6-inch pads.
Exactly.
Wait, so do you buy titties? Do you buy the fake titties?
I used to, but
wait,
those
that was
don't...
the best question of all time. Elliot saying, do you buy titties?
Also, if you got
breast,
boobs,
excuse me,
you really need
a breastplate.
Yeah, like you can push them.
No,
are you a breastplate girl?
I'm not a breastplate queen.
Are you?
No, I mean, I stuff. Like, I'll put stuff for if I have to look that requires boobs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times I don't, because when you're in that corset and all of the padding, so much of it smushes together that I get, and you can do a nice little, like, you know, contour there. And
you put a flower.
Put a little flower in there for Brent, and boom.
Wait, so you're from Texas?
Yes.
Do you see your family? Are you close with them?
We're close. Yeah. I like think about it. I was like, I actually haven't seen them in a while, but it's not because like trying. I'm seeing them next
before
month.
Before we started recording, we talked about, because I wasn't sure and I meant to text you earlier, but like I distinctly remember a moment where you posted a picture on Instagram of your family.
Yes.
And people then started commenting because I think because of your online persona in general, I think that they thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
And that you with like this white family, you're posting it as a joke, which
which honestly now I'm like,
give them the benefit of the doubt. But
you're out of drag.
I knew pretty quickly that you're just adopted and you're from an adopted family. Like that's your story. And it was really gross how people, and to me at least, responded. And I think you even like said in a story how pissed you were about.
Well, I was just like, yeah, that's my family. I'm adopted, you assholes. Like, I remember it. And it was just like, I am so used to being adopted. And like, I grew up in Texas with an all white family. Like, my brother's adopted, but he like actually looks like my parents because he's white. Like, that just instant connection. So growing up, my parents could never be like, yeah, you're all. Like, there was no way they could lie to me about it because I am black or half black.
Are you the only person of color in the family?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're from like deep South Louisiana. So it was already a stretch that they adopted me because right after they adopted me, they like took me to visit my grandparents and my grandfather, a lovely man who's now dead, was just like, yeah, I'm not going to have no N-words in my house.
Yeah. Oh,
so it was like a very strange start.
Yeah.
So my parents were like, cool, so I guess we'll just leave. And then they left the country. And so like 3 days after I was born, we moved to Egypt. And that was, they. My parents always say, they're like, it's so weird that everyone over there was more accepting of a white family with a black kid than they were in America.
That's interesting.
And then after—
What does your parents do? Did you move to
my
Egypt?
Dad worked for a oil company called Amoco that was later bought by BP.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he like quit before the oil spill. Don't worry. Yeah, and so that was like my childhood was just be like constantly being reminded that I didn't look like the people that were raising me.
And why did you leave, if you don't mind me asking, why did you leave your high school? Why did you hate it so much?
Oh, because I pretty much came out when I was like 13. And my parents were— it took them a while to come around to it, but I was just talking to someone about this, and I was like, so many people had such hard lives after they came out, and I thought mine was so bad, but now I hear other people's stories, and I was like, yeah, I mean, at least I wasn't surfing couches when I was 13.
Yeah.
Like, the worst I got was my mom being like, I know some insects have sex with the same sex, but we're not bugs. And I was like, all right, well, let me process that one.
You're like, I'm 13.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what's happening.
Did that, do you think, I mean— it's already hard coming out, especially from, you know, in a Southern family, probably some conservative values in there, or at least upbringing. And then also to add on top of that, being the only person of color in that family, very visibly, quote unquote, different or other than the rest of your family. How did it make you feel?
I think even when I came out and even through everything, my mom was like really good about making sure that I never felt othered.
That's great.
And she would do crazy things. She ended up pretty much just like volunteering for like everything at school so that she could be at school if I needed something. And so I'm about to cry too. I never appreciated it. I was always such a fucking bitch about it. I'd be like, why are you always around? But it was like for those moments when I was like getting stuck in a locker that I could like be like, I know she's somewhere in the fucking building. I will find her.
Well, I hate you that you ever does fit that in a locker. I never could fit in a locker.
I was so thin, honey.
Never was thin enough for a locker.
I was like 13 and they were pumping me with like 100 milligrams of Adderall just to like keep me seated.
Really?
Yeah. I have really bad ADHD, and like now I'm like okay at coping with it. But back then I was just like getting up and leaving classrooms being like, oh, I forgot. I forgot we're in school.
Wait, but Interlochen, which is the school you went to, Performing Arts School in Michigan, is like very selective.
Yes.
So you must have... like, that's a feat to get in there.
Yeah, well, originally my brother was auditioning because he was in rehab.
Is he also gay?
No.
Okay.
He's just very good at singing. Now he's like a music teacher.
Oh, nice.
But he was like in rehab and he was auditioning for it. And I was like, oh, he's going to get an out. And I was like, oh, this might be my out. So I auditioned and then I got in.
And he didn't?
Did not.
How has your family reacted to Meatball?
At first, my mom was like, I don't get what's going on. Like, they didn't get it. But now, oh my God, she's so embarrassing. She, the other night, there's a drag queen in Houston named Blackberry.
Yeah.
And she went to Blackberry's show and walked around with her, my Facebook out, and was like, "My son is Meatball. Do you know who Meatball is?" And like, took my dad to this gay bar, and I was just like, "What is going
on?" I'm literally gonna start weeping.
I love your mother.
She's so supportive, and now she's just like, "Well, your friend Nina went to the Emmys. Why aren't you going to the Emmys?"
Right. Nina West?
Yeah.
Wow.
Moms are weird with drag, because I don't think it's this weird. My mom posts pictures of Sadie on her Facebook saying, "Look at my daughter." Which I always am like, I just let it go, because what are you going to do?
Yeah,
what are you
going to
do? At least she's being supported, and her community is like all Mormon. So
right.
Like,
oh, yeah.
They're seeing who they know as a man. Although right. I do think I can.
Well, you're really barely
think,
a man.
Yes, yeah, true. Just
kidding. True.
Well, my mom still won't show it to people at church. Like she, like she's a little weird where she's like, "Oh, I won't friend you on Facebook because I don't want my friends to see it because they're like all super conservatives or whatever."
Oh, wow.
But
yeah.
Like with family and like her close friends, they all know.
What part of Texas?
They're in Houston, so it's not like that.
Like rural Houston or like suburbs?
Suburbs. It's called Katy. Why am I saying
these things?
Oh, I know Katy.
Yeah.
Say it. Wait. So one of the things that I love about Meatball and your drag in general and your comedy in general is that it isn't necessarily PC. Do you think political correctness has a place in drag, and has it like impacted your drag?
I think there are some jokes that we shouldn't tell.
Yes.
Because we now know that we can't.
Or that we shouldn't.
Exactly. But I think we just had an issue on my podcast because we had Sarah Andrews, famously a trans icon,
a great
and
wig
drag
maker from
queen.
Chicago.
Yeah, 1-800 wig takeout. But she uses the word she says the
tranny.
Well,
tranny
she's a trans woman.
Yeah, she's a trans woman, and she says it a bunch. But there's like this thing where I wasn't supposed to say it, but then like we were using it jokingly because it's okay between us. Mm-hmm. And like we had Danielle Perez on the podcast, and we were talking, and I just referred to her legs as nubs, and like that I didn't realize was like so offensive, but it was. But like she was joking about it with me, and I was like, in instances like that, I feel like I can call your legs nubs. Or
did
what
she say
was
that
your
first?
Legs? She, well, no,
she's
but she...
She's in a wheelchair.
She's, oh yeah, she's in a wheelchair. I also was
Canadian.
Like, we were wondering
she's
what
great.
Chair to, it was our live show, and I was like, we were wondering what chair to put out for you, and then I was like, oh, I forgot you brought your own. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like really simple stuff like that, but like, to me, that's not offensive if that person thinks that it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, as long as the audience is in on the joke, but I never know who's in on the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
it really
the dangerous
is a fine,
nature of everything.
I love when straight people make gay jokes with me. It's almost a weird way of feeling included in my book. But I also understand this is like our generation, I guess, which is you feel the need to feel offended on other people's behalf sometimes if it's really offensive. It's really kind of
I had a moment recently. It wasn't a joke, but it was a really – it was one of the first moments where I was like, oh, I'm living in PC culture and they don't know what to do. And I was at a screening for my movie, Latter-day Jew, and Michael and I were standing in the corner, and I was about – they were going to introduce me, and they said my name and everything, and then they wanted to introduce Michael. Then they never asked about introducing Michael, but they wanted to introduce Michael, and the woman presenting us was like, and then, you know, H. Allen's roommate, friend, special person in his life, Michael.
Gross.
And both Michael and I are just like loving it. We're like, yes, keep going and say the words.
Oh,
say the words.
Special person.
What do you prefer to call? Are you boyfriend?
He's my boyfriend. Okay. He's my boyfriend,
but,
you know?
Okay.
Do you say anything besides boyfriend?
No, but lately I've been thinking about it, and I was like, well, I understand why people don't want to say boyfriend
when they're together
for a long time, but partner is so clinical.
Also have a boyfriend named Michael.
Yes.
We have that in common.
How long have you guys been together?
Over a year and a half now. Wow.
And Michael does a great podcast called Pit a Day. It's over now,
it's
right?
It's the Pits.
Or it's the Pits.
Oh. Yeah, and it's they just watched every episode of Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
or
and I was on it.
Brad
it was great.
Movie.
It's a great podcast.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
I'm curious, did doing drag impede dating at all? Did it make it harder? Did it?
Well, kind of. Well, I started.
I've heard that generalization.
Yeah,
I mean,
everyone says it's so hard, but like, also, I don't know because like, when I was traveling or when I do shows and stuff, there's so many people that just want to fuck me anyway. So I'm just not because I'm
like
sexy or hot.
What's that like?
It's part of it's kind of like I know you only want to have sex with me because I am a drag queen that you like know and are a fan of, but like. That doesn't make me want to have sex with you, but if they're really hot, then I'll be like, yeah, why not? Who's a girl?
Yeah, right?
Well, so the idea there is like they're attracted to you not just because of what you look like, but because of like what you can do.
Yeah.
That's kind of.
But if they want to fuck meatball, if they want to have sex with me in drag, that's not going to happen because I will not do that.
Yeah. That's different.
That's also just gross.
Yeah, there's like so much. Oh, so gross.
And also, like, I mean, the clothes are good, but then when you take off the clothes and you see what builds the body, it's not pretty.
Yeah.
Do you get a do you get very sweaty?
I am the sweatiest drag queen.
How do you feel? I still am not used to the feeling of standing there in a full look and having four layers of tights on, but yet feeling somehow the sweat drip down the back of my leg. Well, and I'm wondering, where is it dripping? Because it's
be
so
emotional.
Packed.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's like a phantom drop of sweat.
It makes me so uncomfortable. Makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I've just gotten, I know, carrying little fans. Yeah, I was like, as long as you look good.
Yeah.
And I'll tell people, the least favorite thing about doing drag is when you're like, ooh, please don't hug me, I'm sweaty. And they're like, oh, I don't care. And then they hug you, and then
they're like,
ooh, you are
nice.
Sweaty.
I don't like that. I think the best part about being a drag queen is probably the fan.
Oh, yeah, just always having one.
The fan is, especially the large clappy ones.
Are there any queens who have, like, not industrial-sized fans, but, like, electric fans?
Well, yeah,
we both do.
You walk around
but
and you
But there is this queen in New York called Charlene, and she carries around, like, a Lasco. Like, she's got one of those
God bless
big
her.
Wow. fans.
That's exactly what
and
I would do.
She'll just plop it on the stage in front of her number and be like, that's what we're doing.
Good
Michael,
for her.
Michael sometimes wants to put Elliot in drag, and I look at Elliot.
I would love to see that.
I know immediately he's going to be...
no interest.
Start sweating because he'll make himself so anxious that he'll be like, I'm hot and it's on my face and I'm gonna burn to death.
And he's
do you get anxiety sweats really bad?
That's my life.
Do you sweat a ton when you're like flying?
No, not when I'm flying, just like normal.
That's when it
life.
Hits.
Really?
I sweat a lot. I fly.
Do you get anxious when you fly?
Very
really. What makes you anxious flying?
Just like everything's got to be at a certain time and you have to be there early. And like, I just want to.
Oh, I thought you were worried about
the
plane crashing.
Oh, no. I take an edible and I'm just like...
I can't. I'm the opposite. I can't take anything and I'm just... I've become a worse flyer. Even though I'm flying a lot more, I've become a worse flyer because I just become so anxious.
You think you have something to live for. That's the
problem. I like to fly. I just...
That's the problem.
We can go at any minute.
I like to fly. I like the act of it. I like the sort of the how it all has to be like uniform and things have to go a certain way. But I hate... when people applaud when the plane lands. I want to gouge their eyes out.
Especially after a real bumpy landing.
Yes. I'll do you one, too. Here's one. I fly Spirit a lot because Spirit is usually cheap on the way back to Michigan. Yeah, meatballs appalled.
I don't think
I'm appalled on Spirit.
For a while, they were doing...
I don't.
It's tight. For a while, they were doing this... The safety demonstration was jokes. So they would
like
say...
Southwest.
It's actually a Jerry Seinfeld joke, but they would say, you know, in case you haven't seen a seatbelt since... You haven't been in a car since 1953, here's how you use a seatbelt. And every time it... Killed. I'm looking at everyone on a plane is so, they're so miserable and grimaced and angry. And I'm looking at these like big burly men next to me chuckling with laughter.
Wow.
You're going home. You've already heard it on the way over.
Holy shit.
You've already heard the jokes. And I easily for 3-4 years they did the same monologue. And I couldn't believe how hard it. There were applause breaks.
Oh no!
The only time I've ever had a good experience flying was between Election Day, November 16th, and the end, like December 30th, 31st, December 16th, because I had a pin that said "fuck 2016." Every single time a flight attendant, stewardess, whatever, would see this pin, the gay one or the woman would come up to him and be like, that pin.
Thank you.
Do you want some wine?
Yeah, right.
We bonded.
Have you flown in drag?
No, I refuse.
You see Morgan doing Morgan Michaels
she
doing drag on the plane?
Apparently does it all the time. She'll start painting on the plane, and that is my biggest fear.
Can you imagine sitting next to that
I don't
person?
Like going... No, because that's rude.
Yeah.
I don't like being like out in public in drag.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I don't like to see... I don't know.
You don't want to see the how the sausage is made.
Yeah, it's like
you also don't want to get up close. Drag is not meant to be seen up close.
Yeah, I walked around a grocery store one time in drag, and I was like, "This is why I'll never do this again."
Yeah,
like,
yeah
it's
I
just
understand.
Like the stares, the looks. It's so out of place, and it doesn't belong there.
Yeah,
It is big for a grocery store.
Yeah.
I'll admit that.
One time I went to a fucking Staples because they were like, oh, yeah, your music has to be on a USB. So I emailed my music to a Staples store and, like, walked in and bought a USB.
That's amazing.
And then I got to the club and they were like, can you email us the song? Actually, we don't have any USB outlets.
No.
And I was like, the shit you just put me through
with the Staples.
Oh, my God.
You don't understand.
Oh, Meatball.
That was so great.
We both are.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people follow what you're doing in the world?
Follow me on my Instagram at spiciestmeatball. Go to my YouTube channel, which is just YouTube/ the Meatball Queen, and my Twitter.
Sloppy Seconds.
I have a podcast called Sloppy Seconds on the Forever Dog Network. It's doing wonderfully great, and I love it. And we'll have you on individually. And then go to my Twitter, Fat Drag Meatball.
Thank you, Meatball.
Thank you, Meatball.
Bye.
And another thing.
So Adam Eli is a writer, an activist. He had a video earlier this year.
A great guy.
Great guy. He had a video earlier this year that went viral of him being...
I don't know him, but I'm sure he's a great guy.
Yeah. Being verbally assaulted on the subway in New York. And he posted the video and it was batshit terrifying. Mm. But he's really cool and really interesting. And he posted something I thought was
And Jewish. Don't forget Jewish.
I remember.
Yes. I think they know with the name Adam Eli.
Hey, don't generalize.
He posted a picture on his Instagram of, like, I think it's him and another man. And it's, like, just their bodies. And it's not inherently meant to be.
It's catnip for Elliot.
No, it's not. It's not meant to be pornographic. It's not, you know, it's supposed to be political. And he wrote... he referenced that he had posted an earlier thing with the hashtag every gay has an Insta body. And he was talking about how basically stuff that we've talked about here ad nauseum about the idea of this sort of ideal Caucasian. The fitness journey of gay Instagram.
For sure.
And so he said, I look back on the folks I've slept with and dated or been interested in, and they were not all white or cis. But all of them had the same thin, waifish body. Brent's hard.
I do have a semi right now.
He wrote, I realized I was and might be part of the problem. So I cursed myself for perpetuating a cycle, a construct of an ideal that hurts me so much. Then I remembered my new favorite rule. And his rule is, only talk to yourself the way you'd talk to a friend. And I'd never talk to a friend like that. I'd never shame a friend's desires, and it's not my fault.
You're not Brent Sullivan.
He said, it's not my fault that I've been told the same body is attractive over and over and over again. It's understandable that I sought it out. However, it became my responsibility to change the minute I had been called in and understood. So he basically, Adam tried to expand his palate.
Appreciation, palate of attraction.
Yeah. And, you know, he...
I mean, first of all, you know, good for him. That's great.
Is going in a negative place.
Well, no. It's not.
I'll just say he talks about, like, hooking up with a guy who is not his normal type. He said he had thicker thighs, he had shaved body hair, and he didn't look like an insta-gay. His body kind of looked like mine, and that, you know, he said I was relieved to be so viscerally and physically into him, and that made me feel like others would be into me.
Yeah. You know, I think we've talked about this a bunch where I think the way my brain works with attraction is very porn-based, which is visual attraction. What do I look at? And that's what turns me on. Mm-hmm. And when people talk about sort of emotional intimacy and like touch and like sensuality, I'm like, huh? I just it's and that's my own problem. So
that's
for
not
me,
what he's talking about though.
He's pretty specifically talking about opening up his distinct taste that is very specific in thin, waifish guys and trying to expand that. As an act of protest,
and
almost.
Find areas of sexual attraction within his own sort of, you know, whatever mental based idea of attraction that he has,
right.
And realizing that not so much in an emotional sort of sensory way, but in a little physical way, realizing that he can receive sexual gratification not necessarily orgasm, sexual gratification from somebody that doesn't meet the standards in which he's built up over, or they've built up over their lifetime.
Yeah, and I mean, I appreciate what he was, what he's doing. I don't think I could necessarily do. I don't know if I could do that. I don't know what that, what that looks like per se. And I don't, you know, I'm not to put words in your mouth, Brent, but I don't think, you know, clearly you have a specific type as well.
Yeah, it would be, but you also realize, and we talked about this, I think, early on in the podcast, that, you know, the reason why you find whatever type you find attractive is based in societal sort of norms that you've subscribed to. You don't biologically find a certain type of person or aesthetic attractive. It is a learned thing. Attraction is very much a learned thing. There's a reason why the ideal body is something that all the magazines are telling us that. That is not the ideal body. It's, we're being told it's the ideal body, so we just culturally assume it's the ideal
body. But that's also not necessarily true, because Brent isn't into necessarily, like, you know, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like,
well, if it's porn based, it's, you know, thinner,
yeah,
muscular for most part,
sure.
You know, with a certain masculine sort of way that they carry themselves in a way, I guess. Like, there's a certain sort of, there is. It's an ideal.
I guess I'm
that,
thinking of like
that you're the, taught the, to like, the, like you said, porn.
I'm thinking of like the anorexic, like super skinny.
Well, we joke with Brent about that, mm-hmm. but that is not actually Brent's necessarily type. I mean, Brent's type is more universal than I think he gives himself, or we even sometimes give him credit for.
Sure.
But I think what you're saying is porn-based ideal is thin, muscular, borderline masculine in how they hold themselves.
And he even, sorry.
It's interesting. I guess I do have a visceral reaction, and he touches upon this, a visceral reaction to shaming someone's desires. Like,
shaming yourself for your desires.
Sure, that too.
We
had this debate very early on in the podcast about particular racial preferences, of which I have none, by the way, just so you know. But I have friends who've not dated people of color, or they've only dated people of color, or whatever. And I just don't feel like it's my place to tell them that they're bad people or that they're racists or anything
like
that.
Sure, certainly not.
That's obviously not what he's saying here. But I guess...
But it is your place to acknowledge, and I think part of the conversation, and part of the conversation I think that he's getting to with his post here, is that we need to acknowledge that the reason why we think something is the way it is not because we biologically are geared in that direction. That is not the case at all. In fact... You are able to receive sexual gratification from somebody who maybe doesn't fit your ideal, but mentally, because of your learned behaviors, you do mentally struggle with seeing that. And so because you struggle with seeing that, you can't comprehend that it could be even a possibility. And I think a lot of people have that.
I think most people have that.
And which is why I think a lot of people are they get so angry when someone does challenge them on them only dating white people, or saying that, oh, I'm not into black people or Asians or whatever their thing. Because when someone says, yeah, I don't think this should be called racist or anything, but when someone says, you say you're not into black people because you learned along the way that that wasn't the sexual type you're supposed to be attracted to. And so now you have a block in your brain that says this person's not attractive. It was not a biological thing. There is no biological sense or science that says you can't be attracted to a black person.
Mm-hmm.
It is something you learned. And if you acknowledge the cultural ignorance and stereotypes and racism that you have, that we all have growing up, that influenced our sexual attraction, then I think we'll be at a better place to actually maybe open ourselves up to the idea of being attracted to different types of people.
But on the same, I mean, I also think on the other hand, like, while so much of it is learned, I do feel like there is a biological impulse.
In what way?
I just, like, I can feel certain impulses biologically for, like, seeing certain things and...
Younger, a fit?
No, I mean, like, I tend to find people of color almost more attractive than white people. And I don't know. I hope that's not some sort of, like, weird tokenism or weird, like, backwards racism. But
well, it might be.
Yeah.
But you're not a bad person or wrong or even racist for having that. It's because your cultural experience has taught you. It's like it goes back to the – during the – Well, civil rights era, Brown versus Board of Education psychologists, during the actual investigation that they did, where they put a black doll in front of a child and a white doll in front of a child. And the white kids always went for the white doll, and the black kids also went for the white doll. And that is not because they biologically prefer white. It is because they have learned over time that what is pretty and what they want is white. And that's really the root of it. It's culture that teaches us these sure. biases that we have. And it's okay to acknowledge it, to work on it like he's doing,
yeah.
and to then have a larger conversation and still date in the way you date and have sex in the way you have sex. Don't shame yourself. It really hurt me when he said that he felt shame for what he had done, because he's not a bad person for having the attractions that they have, wherever those attractions have come from. We're not bad people. It's just, I think we become bad people when we vehemently get angry and refuse to even have the conversation or the understanding that the reason why we do some of the things that we do is because we were culturally taught to do them.
Well, even the picture that he posted, the post is a picture of, I think, his body and another body. And it's like, you know, hairy and you know, it's very like blunt.
Beautiful.
But you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like it's blunt. It's real. It's not meant to be necessarily pornographic, but it is what it is. And he wrote, I lost 57 followers in 13 minutes from this post. He says, I think people literally don't know how to respond to certain bodies on Instagram. They aren't used to it, and it scares them.
I believe
think that's
that.
So real.
I
really appreciate what Adam posted here
too.
Because he's being self-reflective
yeah.
while also talking about something that he witnesses and is a part of.
Yeah.
Rather than making it a lesson about others.
I appreciate Adam. You would do yourself a favor if yeah. you're a fan of this podcast to go follow
he's
Adam.
He's a great follow.
He's a great guy. He's a great writer. He's just great.
Brent, are you following him right now?
He doesn't even follow us.
What would your aunt say? Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's podcast?
Even I follow Adam on Instagram.
My aunt Joanne would say, I probably could use a hip pad or two. Me ask me for some hip pads. How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would say, I've tried to like meatball, but they just give me heartburn. I can't. I'm not going to do it.
Not this meatball. He'll fill your heart with joy. Thanks for listening to today's episode. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I am Brent Sullivan.
I am H. Allen Scott.
A podcast network.